There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, let me talk to you about mybookie.ag. Great site to make your sports wagers. Heck, make your wagers on the Academy Awards, on politics, all kinds of stuff. You name it, they do it over at mybookie.ag. And if you're a first-time depositor, use promo code BENCHED and get a 50% deposit bonus. That is promo code BENCHED, 50% deposit bonus. If you deposit $100, get a free $50. Goes up to $1,000 at mybookie.ag. And they also have a cool new thing coming out. Since Luka Doncic, he's basically already won the NBA Rookie of the Year. If you took Luka Doncic, you're getting paid out right now. They're paying you right now over $150,000 in winning tickets. MyBookie.ag is paying you out right now. But they are doing a fun new contest. It starts this Thursday night and ends Monday night. So Valentine's Day through Monday, if you can, you can now bet on Zion Williamson to win the 2020 NBA Rookie of the Year at 3-1 odds. If Zion does not win the rookie of the take home the title, we'll refund all the bets. So go deposit at mybookie.ag, use promo code BENCH, get the 50% deposit bonus. Go put a bet on Zion Williamson right now at 3-1 odds. If he does not take home the title, they'll refund the bet. All wins. There's no risk. You win or you get your money back. That's simple. But that deal's Thursday through Monday. So go deposit at mybookie.ag, promo code BENCH, 50% deposit bonus. Go take Zion Williamson basically for free to win the 2020 NBA Rookie of the Year. Have all the fun in the world at mybookie.ag. Also, I'd really appreciate it if you guys give a rating and review on iTunes. It would mean a ton to me. It really, really would. It helps move the podcast up the rankings. More people can listen to it, reach more audience. I'd really, really appreciate it. With all that being said, thanks for being great listeners. Hope you guys enjoy Bench with Bubba, episode 144 with Chris Welsh of InThisLeague.com. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 144. Going to do a little outfield preview, catch up on some recent news. And in order to do so, joined by a special friend of ours. He's been on the show before. He is part of InThisLeague.com. He just has a great new book I'm going to just talk about for like 45 minutes while I go get a drink. And he's on Twitter at IsItTheWelsh. Chris Welsh, how are we doing, my friend?
What's up, my friend? How are you doing? And co-judge of our brand new book. So thank you for taking part in it, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was pretty cool. When you guys asked me to do, I was pretty pumped on it. So, and at first I was thinking, crap, I got to write a lot. And then you sent me the email. I was like, oh, this is cake.
Oh, so, no. Yeah,
I mean, I was happy.
We totally abuse our friendship with everybody in the industry. But no, like what we wanted to do with it, so we don't make this, we get this out of the way so it's not a 45-minute commercial for the book. But I'm proud of it because it's like a – It's a structure that my co-host and co-owner of In This League, Scott Bogman, and I have kind of really adopted for like the 6 years that we've been in this industry and doing our thing kind of independently. Was we're really into player debates. Like, ranks are good. Everything is good. The whole, you really should consume every piece of tiers to ranks to mock drafts to, you know, whatever it is that gets you there. But something that we really love is application. And we always talk about our ranks and we individualize the players. But then something when we get people on our show, we'll start to be like, well, what about this guy versus this guy? And the reaction is always everyone's like, oh, man, let me think about that. So we really kind of ended up adopting this player debate, player versus player format. So what we did was we came up with this idea last year to do a book. And we have this bunch of jokes and inside stuff. So we chose an arbitrary number, 99, because we have a shirt, 99 problems, but my draft ain't one. We went with 99, and we took this boxing-style format. So we went player versus player. Bogman and I each would write a blurb about each individual player that's in the matchup. We'd lay out their stats, and then what we wanted is we weren't going to ask our friends in the industry to write stuff in the book or anything like that. We're not that selfish. But what we wanted to do was we wanted them to judge it, because people get really kind of interested in, like, you know, what would Sporer say about, you know, this guy versus this guy? What about Eno? And what about Bubba? You know, all that type of stuff. So what we did is we have like 20 plus industry, amazing industry people, and three judges for every single debate, and it accumulates into a final score. So what's cool is you can go on and you can see what you put on a debate, and then what maybe Eno did on one, and then Colette, if you are the three that are in there, and you can see what each person individually judged and how the result came out. So it's just a cool tool that's not quite a draft guide, but it's a pretty awesome thing that we're proud of, and it is amazingly out now. And thank you for doing your stuff on it.
Yeah, I'm glad to do it. I was honored to do it, and it's a really cool concept, because I know it's just not like legend, like, not legendary is not the right word. It's not like the only people that do it, but I love the player debate format. And so now I feel bad every time I use it on my podcast, because I'm like, I'm stealing it from the Welsh and Bogman.
Yeah.
But it's such a great tool, like you said, for, you know, looking into positions. Like when we do the outfield, I kind of made it, we're debating people in the similar draft range.
Love it.
And that's kind of it's a great way to play, like when you're sitting in the draft room, because everybody goes through it. It's I'm at pick 12, it's round 4, and these two guys or three guys are on the board. What do I do? And it totally makes sense. So I think it's a great tool, and it's not like your normal draft guide that 45 people have, and they all have good ones, but
yeah,
this is a different way to break things down.
And we've always kind of described it too as like, this isn't a draft guide. So I think there's something out there for everybody, and I totally understand it, where there's a lot of outlets that are doing draft guides. And one thing that we're not doing is we're not competing against them. So whatever the draft guide is that you want to go out there, or multiple, what we are is we're just a tool in your tool belt for drafting. Like I said, it's application, which is fun. And, you know, like I said, we all can sit there and we can talk about how much we like a specific player. But then when you really pit them up against a scenario, maybe a similar player, or sometimes in the book, what we do is we'll take a range. You know, you might have a player that's two rounds below, and we're really testing your might to say, hey, you know, this guy over here in the second round, that's good. But what about this guy that might get you similar value down here two rounds? Which side would you take based on value? So that's kind of we went with it. I wish we could say player debates are ours. It's just something that we've adopted. And I appreciate everybody that locks into it. And it's, like I said, it's the Kindle version is out on Amazon. It just released. They held it for a week for whatever reason. We have a paperback version, which is brand new to us. And the copies have just started going out to people. And it's pretty badass. And it's pretty cool. I'm excited about it. And then we've also got the PDF at InThisLeague.com, which, you know, has like search function stuff. And yeah, I hope everybody gives it maybe a little check, and anybody wants to check it out, I would deeply appreciate it. And you're supporting your boy right here. A little Casey Bubba action in there.
Yeah, I love it. So yeah, everybody go check it out. These are good dudes. One of the first groups of guys I got to know on the Twitter sphere and the fantasy baseball realm. And they welcomed me with open arms, and I think you guys should as well. So go check them out. They're awesome, awesome dudes. And one day I will actually go to First Pitch Arizona and meet them. But until then, I'll just pretend like I'm going to go.
Get out here. Why do your listeners sit here and allow you to not get out there? It is the best time. And you know me, you come out here, I will talk your head off about prospects. I'm like,
I can't wait.
The other show I do, Prospect One, it's my prospect show. I'm doing insane stuff right now. I'm doing two episodes a day going through all the teams. And it's just, it's so in my brain. Whenever I can talk to like my friends in the industry and get to be around them, like I just love, like it, me and Rob Silver did it during First Pitch this year. We just spent like hours just sitting there talking about stuff. So your listeners need to remind you and force you to come out here this coming year. If not just spring training, get the hell out here, man. Let's get out and let's enjoy some baseball.
I need to. And that's I love the prospect talks, and you're one of the best at it. And that's, it was weird putting the outline together. I usually only have you on for prospects. Like, you know what? I'm going to mix it up on him. I'm going to make him do some stuff he does on his other shows and see where we go, because he's multi-talented, Chris Welch.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm getting that a lot, actually. Like, I do get a lot of the prospect stuff, but, you know, with the book out, some people want to have us on, and like, a couple people being like, I'm going to have you on, but I might have somebody else doing some prospect stuff. So just letting you know. And I'm like, whatever. Just bring me on. Let's talk. I love to talk to everybody. So I'm just happy to be
exactly.
here.
Exactly. We're just friends talking sports. So right. Let's talk about some recent news here, because it does have some fancy impacts here. We'll start with Francisco Lindor. Calf injury. Going to be out, one of the weirdest timetables I've ever seen. But it's they're saying maybe 2 to 3 weeks into the regular season, because they can't really narrow down the calf injury. I think I saw somewhere 7 to 9 weeks. Not your typical report, but going to miss the first couple weeks. He was the pretty much unanimous number one shortstop. How do you think this affects him in drafts? Because I was in the BARF draft this last weekend, and a guy took him 8th. I thought that was early. I haven't been able to listen to your mock draft episode, but where did he go for you guys?
Yeah, that's exactly you nailed it. We just did a 15-man roto with Sporer. He came on, and it's a chaos of an episode. And that was a big focus of, like, this happened between our last week episode and then this roto one where Lindor went down. And Scott and I do a radio show, and we spent a couple segments talking on this, because my feeling on Lindor was, you know, because this was a consensus number 4 pick in my brain. Like, this was the guy that was going number 4. And this has essentially pushed him out of, I think, a 12-man first round. It puts him right on the wheel. My ranks, I've moved him to 13 at this point. But he's amongst a couple guys that I think are questionable. And something like I kind of drill in with Spore is, like, who'd you rather have, like Lindor or Bregman at this point with both multiple injuries? So Lindor ended up going in the mock draft, I believe, 13. And we talked some about it in the episode, which – yeah, still, like, even I know it's 13, but in a 15-man roto, I had a little bit reservations because it is your first-round pick. And ultimately, like, the calf strain worries me on the stolen bases. And that holds yep. that holds the top 5-6 potential of his value. And if he misses any time, this re-injures at all, you might zap some of the stolen bases. But the positive is this is a solid average, big RBI run, homer type of player. So if his speed is zapped, it's almost like old – it's like Manny Machado. It's actually like Manny Machado-type numbers. But the problem is you take a guy like Manny Machado right now because he's safer, and that's kind of where I sit at him. So I've got him at 13 from 4, which is disappointing. So, yeah, 8 would have been a little too just a little too rich for my blood and barf.
Yeah, looking at ADPs right now, I just reposted my shortstop rankings with the changes with his injury. I have him like my 4th shortstop off the board, right behind Machado, Turner, and Bregman. And looking at ADP, it's around 14 or 15, so kind of where you guys were going there.
Let me ask you one on this real quick, because this is the one mm-hmm. I've been kind of asking everybody about. I felt like Bregman has kind of a line. Like Bogman yep. was Bregman over Lindor. You're Bregman over Lindor. Spore and I are Lindor just over Bregman, taking the risk at right now. But what I'm curious about, Altuve or Lindor for you?
That's so good. That's like Altuve has been that – that kryptonite to many this year. If you believe Altuve's healthy, which you have to believe, I take Altuve over Lindor. We're talking about a guy that was going 2nd in a lot of leagues last year, 3rd if not 3rd, and we know how hurt he really was now. That could factor into so many things that went wrong. So I'll take Altuve. I think you're getting a huge discount at the end of first rounds with Altuve.
Yep, I completely agree. You said it very well. That was kind of my approach too. Like Altuve, I think, is dicey for some people. Super sexy, kind of like early second round pick. But, you know, with this injury, like Altuve kind of clearly jumps ahead due to just what we – like kind of the known stuff that we get with him. And he's still a floor player. But, you know, there is a range. I would open up to anybody if you know – if you're not comfortable with that, like 13 overall pick, Lindor is in the Bregman, me personally, the Goldie, Sale, DeGrom. He's in that kind of territory. And if you really wanted to go, say, Freeman, and it sucks because he's such a good player. I love having him. And I was really looking forward to drafting him. I think in one of our early mock drafts I did, but there's got to be worries, and you know, in multiple sports, we get burned early on by being like, ah, well, 7 weeks, that's the start of the season. Maybe he misses a week. This is just one of those stupid, scary injuries that could linger. We saw it with Donaldson, and Indians aren't exactly putting out a super competitive roster. So it's just more questions than you'd like.
And that's my biggest thing right there is this thing can linger forever. And if you're talking about a guy that you're hoping for, like, say, 25-plus stolen bases, and now he's getting 10 to 15, that's a gigantic fall off at that point in the draft. Because as you know, doing mocks and everything, there's a lot of, like, 15-10 type guys, 15-15 type guys. You can get 100 picks later or something. So it really takes a big hit to me. But at the same time, I don't want to drop him too much because, you know, it is Francisco Lindor. He is young. You got to hope he's going to bounce back. It's just kind of, do you want the risk that early? I'm not a risk guy. In my first few picks, I like to kind of have a little more stability. But some guys like that chance. What I tell people is think Le'Veon Bell last year. Think how that went.
Bogman and I both got burned in a league. I like risks. Paul said one really interesting thing, too, just blowing up the spot of the episode. But
no, like, this is fine. I got some more questions on this. We can roll with this for 45 minutes. I don't care.
Well, just agree. Like, one thing I like that he said that we haven't talked about here and we kind of were almost about to gloss over was go to a 10-man league. And ironic enough, Lindor is a little bit easier to take at like an 8 or a 9 or a 10 because in a 10-man, the player pool is going to be so much better. What you're going to do in the third and fourth round, you know, you might be high third, even low second in bigger leagues. So in a 10-man league, I'm more prone to take that risk with Lindor here. And then, you know, where I'm saying like I might have him, what was I just saying, like over Altuve, like I think when you get in past after Machado, I think Lindor in a 10-man could totally be applicable. So, like I said, maybe like 10 or 11 or, you know, which would be a wheel in a 10-man league. So I think that's a spot.
Yeah, I do like that. So, like, I agree. League size is something that probably doesn't get talked about enough, that it definitely has an impact on, like, when you take guys, and we'll keep using Spoiler's name because we love him, but on his recent, you know, starting pitcher rankings episode, he was talking about, you know, certain pitchers you take a chance on in a 12 team compared to 15, and it makes sense for position players, and it's just not talked about. And I know you, for one, listening to your guys' shows a lot, like I prefer rotos. You guys, some of you guys like your head-to-head, you like your points, you like your other factors.
Yeah.
Do you look at Lindor differently in one of those type drafts? And so we're not specifically saying size of draft, maybe draft style, league style.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're this kind of comes back to that risk thing. Like I'm going to take less risks in roto, which kind of comes back to like what you said. So I'm probably even less likely to reach a bit on Lindor. And, you know, frankly, even when I get, if I were in roto and I had like pick 13 or 14, it's an odd spot where I could even maybe talk myself into going a guy like Goldschmidt over Lindor because the position's kind of crappy. And I think Goldie, I mean, as an Arizona Diamondback fan, watching the depressingness of this garbage team trade the best player probably in this organization's history for nothing, that he's going to have an MVP season this year. He's going to rebound. Every question you've had with Goldie will be answered in St. Louis, and they'll be great, and Goldie will be great. So I could justify taking Goldie over Lindor and then, you know, cry in my sleep because he's a Cardinal.
Last question on this whole little loop we just had. I believe you said you and Spore take Lindor over Bregman, or me and Scotty take Bregman over Lindor. Yeah. Is it just the elbow concern, or is there other concerns that you like Lindor over Bregman?
I mean, I think there's the similar injury concerns. Like if you're going to have them about Lindor, you got to have some with Bregman. Spore brought up the idea of, you know, maybe a power concern that could be out there. I think that's legitimate. There's a lot going on that team, and I think Bregman, if Bregman were all healthy, this wouldn't be a question. But if I'm taking consideration for both of these guys to be question marks for health, I think Lindor is a better power potential. I think he's a better stolen base potential. So he's just like a notch above Bregman. If there was a tier, Lindor might be the end of a tier, and Bregman would be the beginning of a tier. But all things are equal, they're not healthy, and you know if that's the case, we kind of are back to them, all things being equal. And Lindor is the better fantasy option comparatively. So that's why he's easy. But this could change in 2 weeks. You know, if he has a setback or, you know, Lindor has some type of a setback and Bregman's just, you know, busting through and all's healthy and, hey, he's clearly going to go. This is a volatile situation that's going to change probably over the next month, sadly.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see how it keeps changing when we keep getting updated. You know, either Fantrax, ADPs, NFBC, whatever preference people have. It'll be fun to see how it all plays out.
Exactly.
JT Realmuto, right before I finished my last episode with Rob Silver, got traded. So it was perfect timing. Just great freaking I love it. So it was perfect timing. Literally, I hit stop and boom, all over MLB Network.
It's the dumbest thing on the planet. It is so frustrating. People don't understand. Podcasting in general can be so utterly frustrating. And it's just it's what happens. We sit there and we put our hands up and we're like, all right, whatever, I give up.
And now 3,000 other baseball podcasts get to talk about it before I do. It's been so freaking awesome. But we're going to talk about it anyways because it is kind of a big deal. And we're going to start with the Realmuto part, but then I get to get you one prospect question from you.
All right.
So let's talk JT Realmuto going to Philadelphia. Seems like a great landing spot. Does this separate him more over Gary Sanchez at number one, or do you still have – or do you have Gary Sanchez over him still?
I mean, I like Gary Sanchez a little bit more before, but I mean, anyone that listens or knows my stuff kind of knows what's about to come here. But like, I think this is a positive for Realmuto, and especially when you're talking like Roto and stuff, like I think he's safer at this point. Runs, RBIs. I have said this, and I swear to God, if this happens, if we turn this episode off and Harper signs somewhere, how pissed are we going to be? But like, it's going to happen, man. This is like the precursor to – I think this is a precursor to Harper signing with Philly. I think it makes a lot of sense. Even if it doesn't, though, Realmuto hits in the middle of a lineup, solid contact hitter. The stolen bases are kind of gone. So I'm saying all of this saying I think Realmuto is now safer than Gary Sanchez, and the upside is we've – like with Sanchez is you got to get back to peak Sanchez, and that is a major question for me. But the real answer is I have no interest in either one of these guys. I'm not paying a top 100 price for a catcher. And there's nothing that's going to change my mind about it. And in a Roto draft we just did, I took like Buster Posey at like 180, you know, something like that. I'll do that or even go later. So as cool as these guys are and I understand that they might have a step above, you know, the position, but I don't think it's far enough to pay the price unless you're talking about a two catcher league. So, yeah, I think Realmuto is probably the better option, but I don't want either one of them.
Yeah, you just nailed the last part. The only time I look at him or Sanchez is a two-catcher league. You give me Realmuto in an OBP two-catcher league. I'm really excited.
Yeah, I agree.
Other than that, I wait. Like, give me Danny Jansen. Give me Beef Wellington. All kinds of options later on. Okay. I don't have any problem with that at all. Now, they got a return for Realmuto in Miami. First off, Jorge Alfaro. Any care for that at all?
I mean, not a little. He's going to get major time, bad contact rate, tons of power. I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's – like based on like what he's going to return this season, not really for 2019. Maybe long term if he is able to make some contact, but I'd say probably not.
Any interest in Will Stewart?
He's interesting. Now, are you talking just for 2019?
No, just in general as a prospect, you kind of break. As you know him way more than I do.
I mean, it's minimal. It's obviously funny we pick on him because I think a lot of people like know what you're getting with Sixto Sanchez. You know, that was where the big name was. And I don't know if Will Stewart was so much a throw-in. The international – well, he's kind of. What's interesting about them is like – the international money was like super important. That was something with what I think they even came out and said, like whatever they're doing, they want to make sure that they're acquiring international money. So Will Stewart, you know, he's a relatively big lefty, still young, had a great year last year, 2 ERA. I think there's something to be kind of excited about, but I don't think as far as like major fantasy upside, it's there. I don't think he's much of an option this year if we're talking about that long term. He's not the type of pitcher that I target in fantasy, and you wouldn't see on like my top 500 ranks list. But I don't want to discount him. I don't want to say no, there's nothing there. But he's just not the type of guy that I'm looking for. And I'm looking for high strikeout pitchers. If I'm going post 250 or 300, let's say, in ranks, I'm probably moving more away from, you know, these 22, 21-year-old pitchers with minimal upside, minimal stuff, and low strikeouts. I'm moving away from those guys, and I'm looking for like more volatile, like 18-year-olds with major strikeout, maybe control issues. So he just doesn't fall in line with the guy that I want.
Okay, and then Sixto Sanchez, you know, once big-time name, some fall off of late because he was kind of injured. Is this the return they should have got for Realmuto, or are we just kind of hoping for more is better?
That's a good question. I like how you phrase that because – I'm not sure I'm hearing a lot of that. I think it's focused on like, hey, here's some of the other stuff that was out there, but is this the return they should have gotten? Based on like what they're doing, this seems very in line. You know, they're taking like these power, you know, high power pitchers that I think they're hoping they can, you know, tone down, they can develop command. But these guys that are throwing 100 have just electric stuff that haven't been able to quite hone it in. And that's guys like, they have like Sandy Alcantara, and they traded for Jorge Guzman. Like that's been what they're wanting to do. Part of what I think it is the ability to home grow your pitching, because they're not going to be able to bring free agents. Like, Miami's a fun place. Like, when you talk about young guys, like, hey, everyone wants to play in Miami. No one wants to sign in Miami because they suck. The fans don't care about them. The fans don't want to watch them. It's an atrocious thing to deal with unless they go out and they try to, you know, like they used to do, just buy a team. So they've got to figure a way to make it an ideal destination. And at this point, it's got to be done internationally and through the minors. And essentially what you want to do at that point is you want to home grow your pitching so you're not paying premium dollar. And then you can trade or spend your money on hitters. It's a lot. I mean, look at like what guys – I mean, Moustakas hasn't signed. And like Daniel Murphy is out there. So they're home growing what they should get. But to your question, is it what they should have got? I think it's fine. I think the market dictated that. There were all these rumors of everything they wanted, but it all seems so ludicrous of what they were asking for. The rumor that I heard right at the trade went down was that the Braves had offered Austin Riley, but nothing else. And this team is clearly not – like, they don't take the fantasy approach like we would, you know, where quality over quantity. They've been kind of taking quantity because it's like they have so many holes to fill in their minor league system and their major league roster. It's just like, let me get a really solid – top end piece, but I need more. Riley's not going to do it. And that's what they did here. So I guess the answer is yes. But I mean, I personally would have liked them to develop maybe a little bit more hitting, but they're building through pitching, and I get it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think is the whole time I've been trying to tell people, okay, they're not getting the big names, but they're building quantity because the system is so depleted. And if they hit on one or two of all these pieces, things will be much, much better.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, you throw enough at it. Like, they've got some interesting position players, not high caliber. Like, Monty Harrison, I interviewed him in the fall league, and he's really interesting, crazy, freak, athletic guy. And he's made some adjustments that are positive. They signed Victor Mesa. But, I mean, throughout the rest of the system, a couple guys that they drafted, this is like heavy, heavy pitching. So, you know, like, look at the Atlanta Braves. You know, build a ridiculous stable of pitchers, and maybe you can move one for more quality hitters. And, you know, I think they're going to play that game for a little while.
Okay. One might not have fantasy relevance, but I wanted to ask you. Kyler Murray picks the NFL, picks the more stable, immediate money, basically, and maybe a better future. We'll see. But the A's still do own his rights. If you're looking dynasty, do we have a possible maybe Drew Henson situation, or you just say, screw it, I don't want to hang on to him?
I love that you asked that. I thought about putting out this poll, and I didn't do it. I still feel like I want to do it, where I wanted to ask, if you're in a deep dynasty, would you consider drafting his rights and holding on to him? But in the poll, I probably have to give parameters because, like, I play in this league, me and Scott do, we played for like 15 years, where it's like 10 minor leagues, 10 minor league spots, and it doesn't take a roster spot. You can just hold it there. I still wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. This has got to be where it's a big ass league. You got 20, 30, maybe unlimited minor league spots type of a system. And it doesn't, like what I'm doing in RDI, the Roto-Wire Dynasty Invitational, you only get like 35 spots to keep between minors and majors. And it's 20 teams, which is solid, but that's still a place where you don't keep a guy like Kyler Murray. If you could hold him without penalty, I actually don't mind it. If I would consider taking him, you know, probably post 60 or something like that, first year player, and just to hold on to his rights, because I think there's a hard road ahead. Bogman covers college football and college fantasy football and NFL draft stuff for us, and he thinks very highly of Kyler Murray. But I think there's a lot of bumps ahead, and I would not be surprised if 2 or 3 years from now he's kicking back a potential baseball run. But it's the biggest speculative move that it's – I mean, I'd also say, like, why not take an international guy like this guy like Kevin Alcantara with the Yankees, who's like 16 years old or 17. Like, why not take that guy? Because that guy's going to take 5 years to develop. So would Kyler Murray, because he's going to have to sit for 3 or 4 years, or he'll be in the NFL for 3 or 4 years, and then he'd take multiple years. Hopefully I answered that. If you're in a super deep, deep, deep that doesn't have a cost, I would do it just to speculate. I love to speculate, but dude's made up his mind. He's going to go play football, and we're going to see that 5'8 or 5'9 height, and We're going to get all the Russell Wilson to smallest quarterback of all time type of things, and there'll be nothing but questions over this guy for the next 2 years. And hey, best to him. I hope he succeeds.
Yeah, it'll be real interesting to see how it all plays out.
But, is everyone pissed? Because you're in the Bay Area. Is everybody pissed up there right now, or is everyone just like, whatever?
I think everyone's more pissed off at the A's for making the pick. I told all the A's guys, I'm like, they really went on a limb here doing it. And then, you know, he did everything in his rights, but he kind of left them hanging in the end also. So it is a very dicey situation.
Yeah, he's a whole thing. I have an A's preview prospect podcast coming up in, I don't know, I think it's next week. And Melissa Lockhart from The Athletic is on with me. And this was before Kyler. Like, this is in the midst of Kyler essentially saying he's going to football, but he hadn't said he was going to the combine or did his tweet that he did the other day. And we briefly kind of glossed over it because what I know a lot of A's people have done is they've turned their attention from, hey, Kyler Murray, this sucks, to, well, they did get Jameson Hanna, and that's where everybody's kind of moved to. So that's kind of what we talk about in the episode. But, yeah, I mean, between that psycho person who wrote all the crazy stuff and, you know, wished injury on Kyler Murray, to the chaos of poor interviews with Murray on Colin Cowherd, or no, not Dan Patrick, he's been nothing but short of entertaining from the internet to the TV right now.
Yes, he's having he's helping us all laugh. Last little piece of news here is probably not huge, but as a guy that watched him in the desert last year, is there anything to Brad Boxberger going to Kansas City fantasy-wise?
I mean, he could close. That's the best thing here. I'm not a big Brad Boxberger guy. If anything, I was more annoyed by him because, I don't know. I mean, Archie Bradley's obnoxious in his own ways, but I think he's more talented than the garbage that he puts out sometimes, and I wanted him to close. But Boxberger was all right. He was okay. I think he could do okay here. I think they signed him to give him the shot. Willie Peralta could be another guy. I don't know. I think Kansas City could implement some type of a rotation between their closers, you know, just volatile situations like Brock. I think Willie Peralta could actually be the guy, but if I were banking at this point, I'd bank on Boxberger. But I'm not super optimistic about him. He's cheap saves, though. That's what you got to like. And closers are getting – those are getting like wacky right now. Everybody keeps talking about implementing these guys in high leverage situations, which could take, you know, what was the latest one? Like Iglesias coming out of a closer role potentially for high leverage spots. Like, that sucks. I don't want that.
Yeah, there's so many of those starting to come up, and it's like, well, shit. And you don't want to just have saves hold leagues because that kind of, you know, holds are so wonky of a stat. But
Now you don't want to pay for them either. You want to pay for close. Like, yeah. There's an argument to pay for like the top closers because of their stability, but then in that middle range, it's just crappy. Like I don't want to pay for guys that, like Iglesias. He was like my guy, but now I'm worried. I'd rather wait and, you know, maybe speculate on Andrew Miller's or Cody Allen's or maybe even Boxberger's. But I don't know. I might just be like jaded with Boxberger. You know, I know him as his emoji jersey that we all wanted, which was a box emoji and then a poop emoji. That's what we think of him.
Oh, that's outstanding. All right, let's go to the outfield. I got about the top 19 or so on here, and just to give us a little quick part one preview to the outfield, like I said, in player debate fashion, we'll kind of go through these guys, like, not exactly in ADP order, but for the most part they are. We'll kick it off with the two up top, and forever it was no question Mike Trout was number one. Now Mookie Betts is putting some heat on him, and I've actually seen, and you've probably seen it as well, there are guys that are saying Mookie Betts is worth the number one pick. I can't come there, but do you have any inkling to take Mookie Betts over Mike Trout?
No, I don't do that. I don't live that lifestyle, my brother. I don't do that, but Trout is still the guy. We do have the debate in the book is Trout versus the field. And we've done that in both editions now. That's just the way we take it. And I write the field in this one where I was for Trout last time. And there are some interesting things. My field is very heavy about Mookie Betts in there. And I make a lot of cases for him. And but he's clearly the number two. Like, I'm taking Trout every single time. I mean, spring training. Dude, I just bought my first tickets for spring training because I'm out here in Arizona. And I, you know. Right now, people aren't jumping on tickets, and I was like, I got to go to an Angels game because I just want to keep seeing Trout, you know, boom, cheap, first row. That's what we set up. We're on Angels side, first row, because I want to see Trout because he is next world, and he's my guy. And I don't think Betts – it's not a crap on Betts. You know, he's the clear-cut number two. Those are the tiers. It's Trout, then it's Betts, and then it goes Jose Ramirez, and then it's kind of a – it's not quite the Wild Wild West, but it's a whole clump of a bunch of players that people can make different arguments for. But love Mookie, but nothing is going to take me off of Mike Trout until he really actually starts to simmer down.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you there. I saw the arguments. I was like, okay – I respect people that really dig into stats, but I think you're kind of overdoing this one here to prove your point.
There's this cool video I just saw. Who the hell did it? I don't remember who the hell did it, but it was this video that was saying, is Mookie Betts the best athlete in the world right now? And it showed him rest in peace to this cornerback that was trying to cover him. He looked like Chad Johnson out there busting a route and just making this guy look silly. Boom, he catches this touchdown. Then he goes and he dunks. He does this crazy slam dunk. Then it shows him, jumping over a wall, and then he's hitting, and then it shows him bowling. The guy's an incredible bowler. And then it keeps going back and forth, alley-oops, and it's like, this guy's one of the most incredible athletes. And so that's why Mookie Betts deserves to be in the conversation. It's like Trout is otherworldly, but Betts is one of the most intriguing just people to me in all of baseball. Go find that video if you can. I don't remember what it was called, but it's just, is Betts the best athlete in the world? And you'll just see just this compilation of everything that this guy can do.
Yeah, he's super athletic, but he has quite the nerve to take a fat man sport that I can appreciate, bowling, and go dominate it. It's like, you know, go do everything else, go run fast and do all that stuff, but leave the fat guy stuff to me.
Do you,
and Scott?
You do some bowling?
Well, it's a fat man sport. If you can drink and do it at the same time, it's like slow pitch softball and golf. These are things we're qualified for.
Well, I am no skinny man. I am right there with it. I'm just taller. So I used to back in the day when I was younger. And I did more embarrassing things with my life. One of those things was I was in a bowling league. I haven't bowled in 8 years, but I'll put up some 180s. Maybe like I'm not going to pull up a 200, but
it's so funny you mentioned that. We're going to take a side turn here. My dad visited about 3 months ago, and I had stuff in his garage from when I was in high school. So over 20 years ago, probably 25 years ago, and. He brings my old bowling ball from my bowling league from when I was in middle school. And my wife had no idea about this, and I caught shit about it for a long time.
Oh, yeah, you're like, did I mention that I did a bowling league? Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, let me show you my retainer, too, while we're at it. But, yeah, it was pretty impressive. I'm like, why did you save this? You could have thrown this away a long time ago.
You're like, honey, listen, I grew up. I don't do a bowling league. Hold on. I got to go do my baseball podcast. I'll be back.
Exactly. Yeah. I got to go do my 6th podcast this week. I'll catch you later.
Yeah. I'm grown up.
But, yeah. Yeah, all grown up. Let's talk about a guy he's starting to become grown up, and Ronald Acuña, who is just amazing. I know you love him. We all love him. Versus Christian Yelich, who had – I love Christian Yelich, big fan. But in reality, we have to take a step back, in my opinion, and realize he had a really hot 2 months. How do you break down Acuña versus Yelich?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all in on Acuña right now. He has become my number four. That's where I'm at with him right now. The speed power combo is immense.
Well, he took Lindor's spot.
Yeah, he took Lindor. I'm not sure it's definitive. It's not in my mind. Lindor was definitive number four. Acuña just moved up the spot there. I think Yelich presents so much floor, and I think a lot of things went his way. The power definitely went way up than I think anyone expected. The stolen base. Bogman and I had made a big case. Especially when we were talking about the book last year, was that his stolen bases should go up in Milwaukee. Him and Kane, this was going to be a real positive. And if he could hit 20 homers and 25 stolen bases, we're in a great spot. The guy just did everything and more. And it does feel like there's some regression to come. I know it's tough sometimes because you look at just an all-world player like that and you're just like, well, what does that mean? What is regression really going to mean? Is it going to make him fall out of the first round? Is that what you're telling me? Nah, he's going to still be really good. I just don't know if he's going to be, 30-plus homers again. I don't know where that's going to pan out 100%, but what I can tell you is that I know Ronald Acuña, as young as he is and volatile as he is, I feel very, very confident in here telling you that I'm going to get 25-20 from him. And I think the upside surpasses Yelich by a decent margin as far as homers and stolen bases go. The runs and RBI is a little bit there's a little bit more to be seen because there's talk that he might hit 5 in the lineup, and we've even speculated that maybe that's going to take a little bit away from the stolen bases, but what it should do is give a higher run and RBI potential for him. And I know someone would be looking and say, okay, well, if you're going 25-20, maybe 100-100 and a .280 average, it's still not where Yelich was. But Yelich is going to come back down. I mean, he destroyed his high in homers, destroyed the runs, destroyed. I mean, everything was an absolute career high this year. So let's take a step back. Where does Steamer have him? Steamer goes 297 with 27 homers, 15 RBIs. That's a massive drop. I mean, I know Steamer's always like they're conservative in their numbers, but those are massive drops from 36 homers down to 27. That's more than like a 10% downtick. Same with stolen bases. Average going down about 20 spots. I mean, the guy had a ridiculous BABIP last year. And then you go take it a guy like Acuna, not trying to tout that Steamer's the way to go. And Steamer, in their conservativeness, are projecting 29 homers and 24 stolen bases with a .279 average for Acuna. So I think there's a lot of positives on this front. And if I'm going to take risks, this is a big thing I've been saying, is that I want the homer stolen base guys. I want that combo. And I think Acuna represents one of the biggest upsides in that territory in the first round, even though I know Yelich is more of a floor player. But I'll take a risk, and I can afford to bomb out just a little bit if he does do that, because the second and third round are so much. They're so good right now that Acuna has just become predominant number four player for me.
You know, I like that a lot. Acuna, I think, you know, by season's end, I think he might be up in that Trout and Betts conversation. It wouldn't shock me, but he's so volatile, maybe he doesn't get there at the same time like you're saying. So I agree with that. And Yelich, as much as I like the guy, it's just hard to see that duplication taking place. JD Martinez going just slightly fractional numbers behind Yelich. Do you like JD over Christian?
Where do I have? I got Yelich one spot. I got him actually two spots above. I've got Yelich right behind Acuna. Just because of the power speed, like something I had to come to terms with strategy is kind of what I was just alluding to, and I've said on some of the shows, is that I don't want to take a ton of risks as far as speed, trying to buy speed later. You know, we're not doing it here, but you know, the Mondesi stuff, there's a lot of inherent risk that's with him. There's super potential, but we've gotten burned there before. Like, I want the first round to be the five tool player. That's why I'm more prone this year to pass on Arenado. I'm more prone to maybe pass on JD Martinez if I can get a five-tool player. I think Acuna represents the top of that after Ramirez, Betts, and Trout. And then I think Yelich, even though I think there's a downtick, I don't think it's going to be, you know, this massive drop that makes him come out of the first round. Then I come back to the promised hitters of Arenado and JD Martinez, and then we're kind of coming back into a little bit more speed, like Turner, and I personally like Bryce Harper a lot. So JD Martinez is behind Yelich, but he's right there.
Okay, I like it. Let's talk about three of those mashers, one being JD Martinez. So they're about 3.5 to 4 category type players, because not a lot of speed expected here. But JD Martinez, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton. When you look at ADP-wise, again, JD's about 7, Judge 21, Stanton 23. So there's a gap there, but they both offer a lot of power upside and counting stats to gain. How do you kind of rank those three and differentiate them?
Yeah, JD's in his own tier here, but just like we would kind of do in the book, like as a value play or the debate of where I would go, I actually think Stanton is the guy that would win it here for me, because, I mean, the power, he's the top's power guy here. He's the lowest average potential of them. There's also a little bit of an injury risk, but, you know, JD doesn't fall in line with probably what I'm doing in the first round. But I say all of that, you know, if I had the 7th pick and he's there, I'm going to easily take him. But just all things considered, I'm probably more likely to target, like, you know, like get all angry and start effing and essing all over a podcast if I was like, all right, you know, give me Stanton on the wheel. You know, I got Mookie Betts at 2, and I really want Stanton coming back. Like, that, he would be a target of mine. So I think prolific power is sweet here, but if I can get the speed in the first round, I'd love to do that. And then proof in point is look at the second round. You can get Goldie, you can get Judge, you can get Stanton. If you want to go a little bit safer, you can get Freeman. And then there's a few more power speed guys in like Baez and Story. So give me the cheapest option here that's going to give me, you know, 40 homers and 100 RBIs and 100 runs.
Yeah, it's pretty telling. I agree completely that JD's kind of in a class of his own. That batting average differential helps a ton. But you look at Steamer, who I love to use as well, when you mention them, they have Stanton for 45 homers, 96 runs, and 114 RBIs, where Judge they have for 35, 96, and 92. That's 10 home run difference, and sure, just projections, but you're projecting a guy for 45 home runs. Let me do a quick separation of home runs. He is by far the highest in the outfield, ahead of Gallo and Chris Davis by 5. That is crazy.
That's crazy. That's so stupid. You guys,
that's crazy stupid. Talk.
Yeah, it is. I agree.
But all right, let's talk about the next one here. You mentioned how much you love Bryce Harper, so I'm looking forward to this. But I got Bryce Harper, Juan Soto, Chris Bryant. Harper going about 18 or 19. You have Soto at 32 and Bryant at 35. I know Harper is in a class of his own, but at the same time, people have mixed reactions on him, and then some really love the Soto company and the bounce back at Chris Bryant. How do you look at these three?
Do you not like me? Why do you have to do Harper versus Bryant? Why do you have to put that in my
personal? Do you think I lie when I tell you I don't listen to your show?
No, yeah, I don't know why you're doing this to me. Yeah,
it's the radio.
This is a tough one. Like, I'm gonna Nick Soto out of this just for argument's sake. He's the best value, and he's stupid. Like, the guy is such a ridiculous young talent who's also like, I don't. Outside of Vlad, I would even say like Acuna doesn't even represent probably the floor that guys like Soto and Vlad have. But obviously the upside is just, you know, in another world with Acuna. I love the guy, but I want to nix him here because this is firmly Harper and Bryant above. And I know a lot of people are like anti-Bryant this year. And it's just a tough thing for me to wrap my head around because like haven't we seen this story a million times? And I suppose somebody could like turn the story and be like, well, yeah, we've seen a guy be good for a couple years and pair out, but it like he had like one bad year. He had one bad season after multiple, you know, 100 runs, 39 homers in 2016. Like, he can be a bit volatile, but not what we had last year. Last year's an absolute anomaly to me. Steamer's got, 29 homers, 88 RBIs with a 275 average. Conservative-ish, I think that's a very good middle line, and I think he surpasses that this year. So I'm very, very pro Bryant, and I'm also very pro Bryce Harper. And this is something me and Spores share. We are like the team Bryce Harper fan club, where, you know, I know a lot of people just aren't a fan. There's that whole stupid like, is he elite? Is he not? One thing I've always loved about him is when he does like have a pare down of a year, he finds it in other places, and he's got this weird like, I hit 300, then I hit 240, then I hit 300, then I hit 240 over the last 4 years. But, you know, when he hit 330 in 2015, it was like 42 homers, 118 runs, 330 average. Next year, average dipped almost 100 points, but then he found it in stolen bases. He started stealing more. Next year, hits major average again, 319, 29 homers. Counting stats are a little less because he missed games. Last season, average goes down. He finds more stolen bases again. He goes 13, 34 homers with 100 on the runs and RBIs. I just think he's like a chameleon. He can make himself work wherever he is. So straight up, this is easily Harper. I have Harper in the first round for me. And if it's all things, because I don't know what the ADP is. Do you have ADPs up? I'm curious where Harper and Bryant are comparative to each other. Because all things considered, it's Harper, but...
Yeah, and they do have a gap. I have NFBC since January 1st. Bryce Harper is going about 18.
Okay.
Chris Bryant's going around 35.
I have those two so much higher than they're both going. I have Harper in my first round, and I've got Bryant on the wheel of the second round. Like, that's, I think I have him at 24. I got Bryant at 24. And frankly, I want to put him a little bit higher. You know, he's one of those prime. Like, if I had a mid second round pick and I lost out on, let's say, like Stanton and Goldie particularly, I think I might even jump to make sure I get Bryant at like pick 18 or 19. Like, that's how confident I am in him. But the same thing goes with Harper. And I think Harper provides he's a little bit more volatile with the average, but he's going to get his counting stats and he does provide stolen bases. And I don't care where he plays this year, he's going to do well. So I'm going to pick Harper, even negating some of the value with Bryant.
I'm with you though on the fact that I don't know why people are so down on Bryant. It's like we just talked about with all these different injuries with Altuve and everything. It's like people need to look back at the grand scheme of things. And every year basically before this injury, the dude was a monster. He's an MVP candidate. and he's still so young. I don't see how he doesn't bounce back unless there's something just really, really flawed with the man, but I don't see it. So, yeah, it's pretty crazy the value you get on a guy like Chris Bryant.
Yeah, it's great this year, too. And, I mean, you know, just the idea that, like, just think about this for a second. Like, you might have the potential to go get, like, Mookie Betts, Giancarlo Stanton, and Chris Bryant. Like, that could be the start of a team. And I know that's a lot of outfield that I'm talking about, but, you know, Bryant's going to have other qualifications. Obviously, third base is his main position. But, like, that, just think about that. Think about the team that you can build around that, and then maybe you get in some pitching, and then there's just still so much depth later on, or maybe you take some risks. Maybe you want to take Mondesi a little bit later, you know, or you want to go with a younger guy like Gleyber Torres. Like, you can just do so much with your first three picks potentially being first-round talent.
Yeah, there is a ton of depth, a ton of oddities with people and their different opinions. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it goes. As you're doing more mocks, you're seeing it yourself. It's pretty wild what's going on out there.
Yeah, it'll adjust too, though. They're like, Brian's going to come up a little bit as we get closer to drafts, and
he'll go mash like 6 home runs in 2 weeks in Arizona, and then he'll go right back up.
Oh man, yeah, I'll be sitting in the bushes just watching. Like, let's go, Chris.
Because he won't let you close by. all right, Charlie Blackmon versus Andrew Benintendi. Blackman's going 26, Benintendi 30th. You know, when you look at these two guys, if you don't look at their age, just kind of the way they play and the overall skill sets, to me, they seem similar. Just one's getting older, one's kind of getting into his prime. How do you look at these two?
Oh, yeah, this is a good one. What are the ADPs on them currently? Because I like both, but isn't Benintendi going about – am I wrong here? Is Benintendi going about a half a round or round higher, or is he going below?
Since January 1st on NFBC, Blackman 26, Benintendi 30.
Yeah, see, I mean, that's a tough one right there. In the Roto Mock, I took Mookie and I took Benintendi. So I took Benintendi, like, well, I would never pick that would be, you know, in the second round. That's like 90-something, or not 90, I mean, like 29 or 28 or something like that. Because I kind of wanted to say Blackman, but all things considered, if we're talking about this in a debate format, I'm probably, I guess, all things considered, more aggressive on Benintendi. And if I'm getting value on Benintendi, I think it is easily him. You want to take the young upside guy, especially in Boston. And, you know, Blackman, it can get a little bit ugly outside of Colorado. But this is a really, really tough one because Blackman's another one of those guys that were paying for this bad year last year where he was like this consensus top 5 pick. I'm going to go with Benintendi on this one.
Is there anything in the fact that Benintendi is going to be leading off this year that changes your mind on him?
I mean, no, I don't think so. I know where you're going with this. Like, if you have a massive worry of like an RBI drop or something like that, I think home run totals, especially as like an AL guy leading off, he's going to still have plenty of RBI opportunities. He mashes, Benny biceps. I love the 100 runs. I like the potential for a higher average. And I'd even be curious if we're going to see an uptick in stolen bases if you know, he's put in that situation, especially if he's putting – I mean, if I don't think it's out of question, you know, that he sets career highs in runs, stolen bases, and potentially average this year. There's just a little bit of question on, like, where the power develops and RBIs. I think this one is, like, crazy close. Crazy close.
Yeah, it's two similar guys, and I do like him leading off. I think there's a lot to like there, so I'm not too worried about that. This one's interesting. Whit Merrifield versus Starling Marte. This seems really simple. Maybe it is, but two guys with big stolen base potential. They get on base. They do things. One a little more power than the other, but how do you look at Whit and Starling Marte?
I think I'm team Whit here, and this is damn close. I think you're getting – you might be getting a tiny bit of a discount on Whit. PCP, one of the 1,200,000 shows that we do, the Fantasy Black Book, he's made a pretty concerted effort to let everybody know that Whit Merrifield is like Trey Turner light, and I think there's something to that. But I like the second base eligibility kind of puts me over. I think he's a lock for double-digit homers, even though they're low. The stolen bases are just continuously rising. It's great average. So, you know, this is one of those few guys – like in the top 50 where I'm very confident with the stolen bases. And what the hell is this? What is this team going to do this year? Like, are they just going to bunt and steal every single time? Billy Hamilton, Mondesi, Merrifield, it just keeps going. These guys are just going to single and steal themselves to probably a bunch of wins. And we're all going to just like shake our heads. Like, what the hell's going on here? But I'm going to go Whit over that power that Marte provides.
Yeah, they're going to steal over 200 bases as a team. It's going to be ridiculous, and it'll be fun to watch, sadly.
Oh, but, here's a question. What will be higher, the team stolen bases by the Royals or Billy Hamilton's batting average?
I'm going to take stolen bases.
I think you might be right. I think you might be right.
That's a good one. I thought you were going to say like someone's blood alcohol level, but we'll go with the That's a good one. I like that a lot. Wow, that's why you get, that's why you get paid the big bucks.
Yeah, right. So
yeah, I'm a big fan of Witt too. I heard some of PCP's stuff lately, but I'm big team Witt. I've taken some hits from it. Justin Mason told me I'm an idiot for where I have him ranked, but you know we love Mason.
Where do
so
you got?
Okay.
Where you got Merrifield?
I have him my number one second baseman
over Altuve.
Yeah, I'm taking a lot of shit for that. I get it, but I love Whit Merrifield. I really do.
Casey Bubba gives no shits. I like it. Yep, right. Yep. You know what? Go bold or go home. I mean, that's a bit rich for me.
It's a bit much, yes.
But I mean, like, do you recognize? Okay, let me ask you this then real quick on that since we're there. Yep. Do you recognize, like, his value? And I don't know where you have him ranked. I'm assuming if you have him there, you have him at, like, 13 or something like that. If you have him in that spot, you recognize that you can get him, like, probably two rounds later.
Yes. Okay. I'm a big fan of the idea of getting him at the end or beginning of the second and third round turn there.
Okay.
And I think that's tremendous value because what I'm looking at is I can get a very similar production, if not better than Jose Altuve at that pick right there. That's what I'm looking at.
I mean, it's hard to argue. That's hard. The only thing that you know goes against them is like the Royals in general. And that question we always ask, like, you know, who the hell is going to bat who in and you know how are they going? I mean that's what this team is doing because they don't have a bunch of killer players. They're gonna have to manufacture runs, and Whit Merrifield is at the top of that. So all right, yeah, you're bold as hell, man.
You mean Ryan O'Hearn's not gonna drive in 140 runs?
That dude can mash, man. He was one of the first homers I saw in the Arizona Fall League like 3 years ago. Dude crushed one in surprise. He's got some power, but you know, no average.
There you go. Just a couple more to go here. This one's intriguing to me because it seemed like it was a debate last year after their monster rookie campaigns. They kind of went different directions, but both really good last year. You got Rhys Hoskins versus Cody Bellinger. They're the 15th and 16th outfielders off the board right now. Hoskins will regain first base eligibility eventually. Cody Bellinger has both. They're going right next to each other. How do you look at these two?
This one hurts my soul a little bit because I do love Cody Bellinger, so, and he's going to be put in a lot of different situations this year. But, and I think it's hard to go against Rhys Hoskins right now. I'm going to lean him. I don't feel, as you can hear in my voice, I don't feel super confident. But I would also say that, like, maybe this isn't good analysis, but like, I view them very similar. I view them as like incredibly similar players. So if I've got Hoskins a couple notches above, and I know the range that I want him, let's say, you know, I've got them both in like the I got one in the mid 30s and or late 30s and one right at the edge of 40. That's Bellinger. If I'm in like third round and Hoskins goes, I just move straight to Bellinger, and that's just where I go with it because they're both going to qualify at outfield, so there's no differential between position eligibility. They're both big boppers. Hoskins, again, in such a hitter-friendly park in a place that I think they could bring in Bryce Harper. They're bringing in a very good contact hitter in JT Realmuto for RBI opportunities in front. I think counting stat-wise, there might be a little bit more on Hoskins, but there might be some stolen base potential with Bellinger. But I just slightly lean Hoskins and just gladly move to Bellinger if he's taken.
Yeah, I really like Hoskins, too. Like bounce back's not the right word because he still had 34 home runs last year.
Yeah.
But it just seemed like it was a quiet 30. It seemed like a quiet 34. It wasn't as you know boisterous as his 18 and 50 games we saw. But I just think moving back to first base, getting comfortable where he's used to being, I think it's going to be big for him next year. And if any, I think he's one of the handful of guys I could see getting 40 plus home runs. And I like that a lot with Hoskins at that point in the draft. And I'm not saying Belly can't do it, but there's still a lot of swing and miss there that scares the crap out of me.
Yeah. I mean, there's kind of inherent risk with both of them, but you know, first base is just such a problem. I know there's some people out there going to be like, that's not a problem. You can get Justin Smoke later. It's like, I don't want to do that. Like
I've seen that option mentioned too many times in the last like 72 hours.
Like I'll take Justin Smoke, but I'll take him as like a utility or corner infielder. Like I really am starting to lean to like wanting one of these guys earlier on as possible. I waited a little bit in our latest mock draft on the Endless League Fantasy Baseball podcast, and I ended up getting like Matt Olson, but I got him right around 100. In a roto format, and I was okay with that, but I was starting to get to like the bottom of the line there, and you'd have to go him or someone like you know E5 or something. So I'd rather be in this territory of Bellinger and Hoskins if I can.
Oh, I dig it. It gets a little murky there at first base, which is so freaking weird.
Yeah.
The last one we're going to talk about here, it's the 17th, 18th, and 19th outfielders off the board at the moment. They have a lot of similarities, some differences as well, and that's what you're here for. Lorenzo Cain, George Springer, Tommy Pham. Hmm. What do you got?
This is a list. I'm going to go a little bit off of Cain in this instance, and I've talked myself out of him a little bit, even though I've got him ranked pretty decent. But a comp that I've seen out there and I've talked about as well is, like, I feel like you can get similar production that Cain gives you with a Victor Robles a couple rounds later, though Cain is he's more floor. Like, you can kind of count on the average. He's just really low homers. Tommy Pham have the lowest ADP of these guys? Because, I'm going to say Tommy Pham, even though I desperately love George Springer, but the team does not run him. I will take George Springer, and then after, I would actually love to pair him with a guy like Tommy Pham. But if you're talking value, you're talking about just overall fantasy production, I think Pham is going later than these two. And even if he's not, he's probably the best combo player here.
Yeah, Kane's going about 62, Springer 64, Pham 65. So
okay, yeah, they are
all real close.
Yeah, all real close. Yeah, I'd say it's Pham, but he's the least sexy. Well, I mean, him and Cain are both unsexy. Springer's kind of a value if he's in the 60s, yeah. Actually. Now that I'm thinking about that, like, I would be very tempted. If I was in the 60s and he was there, I'm actually probably taking Springer because I have him personally higher. But roster construction is probably, like, really important to this too, because if you haven't got a bunch of stolen bases, then this could be a problem, you know. But if you went early and you got, you know, Trey Turner, and then let's say you also got Whit Merrifield, you know, those are two extremely high stolen base guys. George Springer at 60 might be perfect for here, because you'd love to have 30 plus homers with, you know, some more bopping power. So it could go a little bit both ways, but I mean, I'll say Pham.
Yeah, that's what's interesting here, because it goes back to your thing earlier. You can start out Betts, Stanton, Bryant, and then one of these guys. And it's just like, it just keeps getting deeper and deeper. That's obviously if you're negating pitching, which is always an option. But yeah. Pham's kind of the interesting one. I think he kind of does a little bit of everything. So if you are looking for steals, I like that angle. But Springer just keeps getting kind of, I don't think underappreciated is the right word, but it's what it feels like. He's kind of had a down year last year. He was pretty, you know, he was injured off and on. But overall, he's been really, really good in his first three, like, full seasons with the Astros. So, you know, 25-plus homers. The steals aren't really there, but you mentioned it. He's going to score a ton on a really good offense. I think there's a lot to like there, and you are getting a serious value there, as you said.
Yeah, I like him. It's sad. It's sad, George. Get better.
Well, that gets us through the first part of my outfield preview. Why don't you go ahead and plug everything you have going on?
Well, we don't have another 45 minutes, my friend. But listen, just InThisLeague.com, the In This League Fantasy podcast. We do tons of sports. Prospect One, I got a ton of crap going on over there. Team preview episodes. I rank top 500 stuff. I've been interviewing prospects. I actually have Alex Kirilloff from the Twins coming on an episode later this week. That's going to be pretty cool. So I've interviewed a bunch of those guys. And we also have a Patreon. You know, we've been one of the forefronter guys. We've been going on for about 3 years on our Patreon. Tons and tons of stuff. If you like to laugh, we got comedy shows that we do for only Patreon. We've got ranked. We just got a whole bunch of crap, and you're supporting independent podcasters. And big time 99 fantasy baseball player debates. Amazon, you got the ebook and the paperback. Paperback, very cool, only a couple bucks more, and PDF over at InThisLeague.com, and would love some support on the book, and people pick it up and let us know what they think and what our guy Casey Bubba did on the judging.
Yeah, everybody go check it out. It is good stuff, and good people support the cause. Always good information to help you out. And as always, Mr. Welsh, it was a pleasure having you on the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, my friend. Enjoy and looking forward to talking to you soon.
Yep. Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 144 with Chris Welsh of InThisLeague.com. Catch you guys later.
life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. Because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.